Good evening. I'm Paul DiRienzo with the news, the WBAI news for Tuesday, November 3rd, 2020. Hurricane Eta made landfall in Puerto Cabeza in Nicaragua with sustained winds up to 150 miles per hour today. Nicaraguan authorities declared a red alert on the Northern Caribbean Coast Autonomous Region, which is home to over 500,000 people. There have been 28 named tropical storms so far this year, of which 11 have been hurricanes. The hurricane season officially ends on November 30th. And Edward Snowden said Monday that he and his wife intend to apply for Russian citizenship without renouncing their U.S. citizenship. Snowden, a former contractor with the National Security Agency, has been living in Russia since 2013 to escape prosecution in the United States. He's wanted for leaking classified documents detailing massive government surveillance programs. The couple announced last week they're expecting a child in December. And 9 of the 10 drive-through polling sites in Harris County, Texas, were shut down on Election Day following a series of legal challenges by Republican groups seeking to throw out nearly 127,000 ballots. Officials in the Houston area county decided to close the sites to avoid putting thousands of votes in jeopardy if the legal battle continues after the election. Harris County is a crucial battleground in the presidential race and home to a large Latino population. Recent polls show Democrat Joe Biden in a tight race with President Trump in Texas, an increasingly diverse state that traditionally votes Republican. And we'll be talking more about the battles that'll be going on in this election later on. A federal judge in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday ordered the U.S. Postal Service to sweep facilities for remaining mail ballots and rush their delivery as receipt deadlines close in. U.S. District Judge Emmett Sullivan gave the Postal Service until 3 p.m. to ensure that no ballots have been held up in regions that have been slow to process mail ballots. It applies to areas within the battleground states of Pennsylvania, Michigan, Georgia, Texas, Florida, and Arizona. With the exception of Pennsylvania and Texas, each of those states requires that mail-in ballots be received by close of polls on Election Day. Americans by the millions waited patiently to cast their ballots at libraries, schools, and arenas across the United States today, a show of civic duty in one of the most polarizing presidential campaigns in the country's history. And President Trump made a cryptic remark about winning during a news conference earlier today at his campaign headquarters in Virginia.
Winning is easy. Losing is never easy. Not for me, it's not. But I think we have, when you see rallies, the likes of which in the history of this country, probably in the history of the world, nobody's ever seen before, there's a tremendous love going on in this country. And there's really a tremendous unity. There's a tremendous unity. Nobody's ever seen that, where you take an airport and the airport's not big enough to hold the crowds. Nobody's ever seen a thing like that. And our opposition, as you know, would have a few people sitting in circles. And that's okay. That's not abnormal. That's not abnormal, actually. I mean, that's the way it is. But we would get crowds of 50,000 people, 45,000 people, more. Nobody's ever seen anything like that.
Trump has refused to clearly state he would leave office if defeated, while seemingly calling on some of his core supporters to interfere at voting places. But besides some slow mail deliveries and a handful of incidents at the polls, the election has been remarkably smooth. Challenger Joe Biden was ecstatic about the more than 100 million votes cast before Election Day and was confident Trump supporters would fail to intimidate voters.
Over 100 million people have already voted in the United States of America. They're going to determine, no matter what the president says or anybody outside says, they're going to have their voices heard. This is going to be a peaceful transition. It's going to move forward.
Candidate Joe Biden. But in cities like New York and Washington, D.C., there's palpable anxiety as some store owners have boarded up their windows in preparation for possible violent street protests. But activist Hope Nyer is with the group Shut Down D.C. She says her group is aiming for a peaceful vigil with entertainment later tonight in front of the White House, where D.C.'s mayor renamed the street Black Lives Matter Plaza after protests in June.
The scene that we're preparing for is a massive watch party. We're going to come together at Black Lives Matter Plaza to celebrate the possibilities for the future, for a future after Trump, out of this pandemic, and moving forward together. We're going to watch the results come in together. listen to go-go music, the sound and spirit of D.C., enjoy performances from salsa dancers, a presentation from a fitness group, as well as incredible speakers from a variety of associations.
Two possible outcomes. One, Trump wins. One, Trump loses. What do you expect to happen if Trump loses?
If Trump loses, I think we'll all be pretty happy to hear that. But we recognize that Donald Trump is not responsible entirely for the problems that this country faces. He didn't invent sexism, racism, and they won't disappear when he's out of office. So we believe that it's important to hold other parts of the government and society accountable, and we will be... I'm sorry, we just had a bunch of supplies spill.
Okay. Say again, repeat what happened?
We were walking and hit a bump and some supplies fell.
Oh, you're bringing supplies? What are you doing right now?
The people that I'm with currently are acting in a medical capacity tonight. We're going to be setting up a clinic here in the plaza, and they're bringing food, water, tea, hand warmers, things like that to prepare for the temperatures to get colder as the night goes on.
So the other side of the coin is if Trump wins re-election, what happens then?
The first thing we have to do then is examine by what means he won. I don't think any of us are willing to trust this president to allow a fair election to happen. And if he declares victory, I think we'll need to seriously consider whether or not we can accept that. If he does win legitimately, we're not going to know that tonight. We're still waiting for mail-in ballots to come in, which he has repeatedly claimed are inaccurate or unacceptable, when that is the furthest thing from the truth. Definitely, I think the first thing we need to do, if Trump claims to have won, is consider the veracity of that claim.
What is the goal of your organization, Shutdown DC? Do you have a specific set of demands or goals?
That's a great question. We don't have a particularly condensed or specific set of goals or demands, but we are formed around the idea of racial justice, climate justice, economic justice, healthcare justice. Frankly, just a better future, the future that we believe in and the future that we deserve.
Do you work together with groups like Black Lives Matter or Antifa or any of these other groups or organizations?
I want to push back against the idea that Antifa is a group rather than an ideology. But we do. We are very lucky to work with our friends at Black Lives Matter DC, the Palm Collective, Spaces in Action, all sorts of truly incredible groups that you could come see if you were to join us in Black Lives Matter Plaza tonight.
Well, I'm in New York right now, and we'll have events here as well. Anything you'd like to add?
If you are in DC, anyone who's listening that is in D.C., we invite you to join us here in Black Lives Matter Plaza after you vote. If you haven't voted yet, don't forget that if you are in line when the polls close, you can stay in line. And if you're in D.C., text democracy to 88202 to stay in touch with Shutdown D.C.
Okay, democracy to 88202.
Yes.
Activist Hope Nyer is with the group Shutdown DC. In New York City, boarded up windows are becoming a common sight by this morning. Mayor Bill de Blasio has suggested store owners take in any merchandise on the streets as part of the new city's new program to allow use of the sidewalks by merchants to keep down contacts that might spread the coronavirus. But de Blasio adds, boarding up windows is unnecessary.
This is based on the judgment of public safety professionals. They've obviously had an ongoing dialogue with the business improvement districts and the business community. I think they are different things, you know, obviously used in different ways. But look, each store owner has to make their own choice. Some have decided they want to put something up. I think it's fair to say the vast majority have not. But it's public safety professionals just using their best judgment as to what matters most.
New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio. Meanwhile, Attorney General Letitia James is alerting New Yorkers who voted by absentee ballot of their rights under the state's new Notice and Cure law. Under the law, voters must be notified if their absentee ballots are being rejected for certain errors that might have been made in filling out the ballots. The voter must also be given an opportunity to fix such errors within an allotted time period. If there are any deficiencies in the ballot, they have 7 days to fix the problem. If the ballot is received on or after November 3rd, voters have 5 days to cure any deficiencies. Philadelphia, in a city in a close battleground state and still reeling from nights of unrest after an emotionally disturbed black man was shot down by police in a hail of bullets, the state attorney general says his state is committed to counting every vote.
The law requires that all votes be counted, all legal eligible votes be counted. And that's exactly what we've done in all past elections. Unfortunately, the President of the United States is out assaulting our system trying to undermine the rule of law here in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Nevada, and other states where he's been attacking their voting system. And the point of that tweet is to make very clear that the election's over, not when Donald Trump says it is, but once all those votes are counted and a proper winner is declared, whoever that person is. I can't speak to what some candidate for an office may or may not do from a litigation perspective, other than to tell the public that we're prepared. We're prepared to play defense, and we are prepared with whatever steps need to be taken to ensure that all legal eligible voters have a safe and secure access to the polls and that their votes will be counted. What I hope comes is a smooth and safe election and people, giving these county clerks the patience that they deserve to count the ballots and to make sure that proper winners are certified in every race from the State House to the White House.
Pennsylvania State Attorney General Josh Shapiro. In Washington, D.C., the House Speaker Nancy Pelosi told reporters that Democrats will fight to count every vote.
We are ready legally, constitutionally, congressionally, in every way to protect our democracy for any skullduggery that the president may try to introduce into this. But be assured that our democracy will survive. I don't like saying that. I don't like to have to do that. But if that's what the president wants to do, go onto that battlefield. We're ready.
Pelosi says the future of American democracy is at stake in the voting.
This election is about nothing less than taking back the soul of America, whether our nation will follow the voices of fear or whether we will choose hope, liberty, and justice for all. This is the most consequential election of our lifetime, and I am confident that Americans will vote their health and vote for change.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, after the polls close, some voting experts say that's when the real fight will begin, a contest fought in the courts as the Trump campaign tries to stop the counting of mailed-in ballots. Gene Meurer is co-chair of the National Lawyers Guild International Committee.
Well, it's unclear what legal challenges there will be. Trump campaign has focused for a long time on the issue of mail-in ballots and has challenged all over the country the use of mail-in ballots or ballots being sent to voters that were unsolicited for potentially doing absentee ballots on a no excuse basis, and they've lost all of those lawsuits around the country. Although those cases, I'm sure, are going to make their way potentially up to the court. A lot of the cases have been thrown out because the Trump campaign didn't have standing to raise the issue. That meant that in some of the states, they determined that the Trump campaign could not claim that they were adversely affected to make a claim. But the main thing that the president was focusing on was a mail-in ballot, claiming that they were fraudulent.
Right, but the ballots have been mailed in. It's over now. What happens now?
That is not a basis for any type of claims. The real concern is administration claims that there's got to be some hard stop on counting the ballots. And that seems to be their latest strategy. There's no basis in law for that, but that's really their what he's been talking about as an area of concern.
What happens if he's losing and he wants to continue the counting and the Democrats want to stop it?
I doubt the Democrats would want to stop it.
Unless they were losing.
The question is, who knows? The people who have the right to vote and the right to have the vote counted is the voters, not the candidates. There's no basis in law to try to stop the count. The thing that I was most worried about as time was going on was the impact of COVID, obviously, on the suppressing the vote and people not trusting the post office to get their ballots back, and that this, of course, is going to be creating issues of whether ballots accepted after tonight and in the next few days. The only area where they've been making a claim, it can't be counting ballots after the fact, which is by law, it's absolutely allowed to count ballots until it's all have been counted. I think in some ways, all the threats to suppress the vote have backfired, and the fact that you have 100 million votes cast before today is an indication that people were not happy with being told that their vote, the ways in which they were going to be trying to suppress the vote. But there's still problems all over. I'm sure there's lots of problems with ballots being spoiled that shouldn't be, or various other things. And it's not until we count, there is the count, that we'll know. My sense is that there's a lot of people who are there's a lot of bravado, but there is a lot of voter suppression. There's a huge amount of voter suppression.
Yeah. What is the problem with voter suppression?
Aside from the issues of called racial discrimination and the efforts to prevent people of color, and particularly African Americans, from exercising the right to vote, from the get-go, any time you try to put restrictions on voting, such as getting a certain type of ID, or restricting where you can vote, or the days you can vote. The U.S. is one of the only countries in the world that has an election on a weekday that's not a national holiday. This day, the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November, was set in 1845, when only white men can vote. And it was set up as being a time between planting seasons, you know, for an agrarian society. And it wasn't going to be on a Sunday because people went to church and you needed a day to get to the county seat to vote. So that's how we got November, the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November. Having people have to choose between working and voting has been really terrible. The fact that there's been early voting has been helpful.
Jean Mirror is co-chair of the National Lawyers Guild International Committee. And you're listening to the news on WBAI Pacifica Radio in New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. A Wisconsin court commissioner on Monday set bail at $2 million for Kyle Rittenhouse, the 17-year-old accused of killing protesters in Kenosha, Wisconsin. It's his first court appearance in the state after being extradited from Illinois last week.
Court is going to impose a $2 million cash bond, believing that is reasonable, necessary, and sufficient at this juncture to secure the appearance of Mr. Rittenhouse.
Kyle Rittenhouse thinks he's above the law. He's been treated as such by law enforcement. And so he believes he's justified in this case. And for him to run wouldn't surprise me. And this defense of self-defense, that is impossible. And my son was a hero. He tried to stop him. And so did everybody else. He was an active shooter, and he tried to flee. And my son lost his life protecting other people.
And that's John Huber. He's the father of one of the men killed. The Illinois teenager will be tried as an adult in Wisconsin. He faces five criminal charges for allegedly killing Joseph Rosenbaum and Anthony Huber and wounding Gage Grosskreutz during protests after the shooting of a black Kenosha man by police. Rittenhouse's lawyers argued he had allegedly acted in self-defense. The surviving victim and the families of the two men argued for even more bail because of what they say is Rittenhouse's support from well-heeled militia organizations. And in June, at the height of protests against the killing of George Floyd by Minneapolis police, President Trump reportedly emerged from a bunker under the White House where the Secret Service had taken him, fearing protesters might scale the fence around the president's residence. Trump, reportedly angered by news reports about his hiding out in the bunker, ordered Homeland Security and other police agencies to clear the park in front of the White House without warning and before the curfew went into effect. He was accompanied by General Mark Milley, chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, on a walk through the park to a church where Trump held a Bible aloft in a photo op meant to make him look strong. Soon after the incident, Milley publicly apologized, saying the military has no place in domestic U.S. politics. But the incident raised the question, where would the military stand if an election was contested with violent protests and conflict between Americans in the street? A former United States Marine veteran with combat experience in Iraq and Afghanistan is Danny Surgeon.
That it's being discussed beforehand, especially this past week, but really it's been a point of discussion since the George Floyd protest. There's been speculation about whether the military would have a role in a contested or a violent fallout from the election. That in and of itself is disturbing that we're having that conversation. There is limited but not much precedent for U.S. military roles surrounding elections, although it's usually involved, the absentee ballot vote, getting Lincoln reelected in 1864. In terms of actual you know, getting in the streets. I mean, the image of the tank in the street on election day is, as you noted, very much an Arab or a third world or, you know, Tiananmen Square type scenario. We don't associate that with the U.S., you know, republic or democracy. And so that's problematic. I think that there is a, what we would say in the military planning community, we would say there's a, you know, a relatively low to modest probability, but an extraordinarily high or severe, as we'd say, risk if the military did in fact have to do it. And when you combine those two,
could soldiers decide if they're put into the streets, is a hypothetical, not to follow their orders, and what would happen then?
The oath that we take, officers and enlisted alike, every time they re-enlist, in fact, is, you know, I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against enemies, foreign and domestic. And only after that, secondarily, do we then take the oath to the president and our superior officer's orders. That is supposed to be the priority. However, whether that would happen in practice is a whole other question. And my sense is that in general, the military leadership, particularly the senior leadership, will tack towards the Constitution, right, rather than overstepping their legal mandates. However, whether that would be evenly spread in every unit and down to the rank and file, who some of which have actually very Trump supportive tendencies, is a whole other question. So I hope that we don't put this all volunteer professionalized force to the test, because I don't know that I want to know what happens. I hope that they would not violate the Constitution and their statutory role.
Yeah, and you were mentioning in the interview I heard earlier that there's been an askew since they went to a volunteer military in certain areas of the country are overrepresented in the military.
That's right, and it's particularly the case in the combat units. So in other words, if the 82nd Airborne comes into the streets, active duty paratroopers, the ready brigade of the United States Army, which Trump threatened, right, during the George Floyd protests, he threatened to bring them in via the Insurrection Act. If that happens, understand that while the military may be vaguely 40% minorities, right, the infantry squad, the average infantry squad of nine soldiers is, you know, if you grab bag and pull it out, seven of them on average are going to be white males, disproportionately from the Deep South, the Mountain West, and some of the Rust Belt states. And so we have to keep in mind that doesn't mean that they're going to do the wrong thing. It means that that is a serious risk, and there is a potential partisan flavor to that demographic in America. And the military is not above that. It never has been either. That's a myth.
How would you see this playing out in its worst case scenario? What to look for?
The worst case scenario is that we see the Insurrection Act called out, or that individual commanders, and I think this is a very low likelihood, but risky, that individual commanders at the senior level decide that they have to step in on their own. So there's really two ways the military gets involved. They're either called out by the president via the Insurrection Act into the streets, active duty troops. And then the question is, what do they do? Do they support the president's order? Do they follow a president who potentially doesn't concede? And then the second thing is, if you have a president who won't concede, won't leave, or has sort of federalized the police and even local forces into a paramilitary-style militia, if that were to happen, then the question is, does the senior military leadership step in and order their troops to remove him or create some sort of stability or disarm folks? And I hope that doesn't happen either, right, because there's a whole lot of questions. Not all of this is precarious. I hope we can avoid all of it, but we have to be ready for the fact this could happen.
Uncharted territory.
Literally uncharted.
Danny Surgeon is a former United States Marine veteran with combat experience in Iraq and Afghanistan. And the FBI is looking into a spate of mysterious robocalls urging people to stay home on Election Day. State and local officials have been raising the alarm over at least two separate automated call campaigns as millions of Americans cast their votes today. The FBI says only that it's aware of reports of robocalls and had no further comment. New York Attorney General Letitia James announced a state investigation into the robocalls earlier today, and an official at the Federal Communications Commission says the agency is aware of the reports as well. Robocalls urging people to stay home were also reported in other battleground states, including Florida, Iowa, and Kansas. In Michigan, officials say they had reports of a separate batch of robocalls today, urging residents in the majority black city of Flint to vote tomorrow due to purported long lines. And in New York City, the NYPD is considering restricting car and foot traffic in swaths of Manhattan as a potential contingency plan to deter looting and vandalism in the event of post-election civil unrest. But issues still remain about how the NYPD handled the protests in June. A report from the New York City Corporation Council is due any day, as well as another report from the Department of Investigation. De Blasio also fielded criticism the NYPD was more aggressive in arresting Black Lives Matter protesters than pro-Trump counterparts. Over the weekend, cars sporting Trump flags traveled in convoys through city streets, some of their license plates missing. Yet there were no arrests.
Across the ideological spectrum who have been protesting, and if they violate a law to cause harm to someone else, people are being arrested. There's clearly evidence that it happens to people across the spectrum. So I don't know about everything that happened with those caravans, and if there's anything else, if someone was injured and they're pressing charges, obviously that's going to be investigated and acted on. But I just don't see any evidence of a disparate approach. There's been, to pick up on what the deputy mayor said, hundreds and hundreds of protests over the course of this year, this incredibly painful and emotional year. The vast majority were peaceful throughout with no arrests whatsoever. And then where there have been arrests, obviously it's tended to be very few people amongst larger groups of protesters. But it has to be, and it will be, and it has been, fair treatment across the board. I mean, that's what we're really, really adamant about. And if anyone has, you or anyone else has, a specific instance that needs to be followed up on, we want to know about it. Because if someone wants to press charges who hasn't already, you know, we obviously want to make sure they have the right to do that, and the NYPD will follow up.
And that's Mayor de Blasio. So this is where we come to an end of the first part of the WBAI news, but we are continuing to stay on the air, and this time we're going to take your phone calls.